This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This year's early and severe flu season has prompted a widespread response across the Granite State. Hospitals and nursing homes have restricted their visitation policies. Pharmacies, grocery stores, and other businesses have set up makeshift flu shot clinics, and many employers are urging workers who feel ill to please stay home. The latest flu strain, officially known as H3N2, is hitting almost every state hard, and it's been especially tough for healthcare facilities. Not only are hospitals and doctor's offices seeing more miserable patients, but staff have been out sick too, and nursing homes with their vulnerable elderly populations have had to be especially vigilant. But as far as combating this year's virulent virus, the old time-honored flu prevention advice is still what doctors prescribe. Wash your hands, get plenty of rest, and don't be a martyr by going into work if you feel sick. Physicians also say it's not too late to get the protective benefits of a flu shot, although that's a harder sell. Every year, more than half the U.S. population either forgets or actively chooses not to get the vaccine. Today in The Exchange, an in-depth look at influenza this year, the reaction across the state, and recommendation this flu season. Let's hear from you, too. What impacts have you seen from the flu so far? How has it hit your workplace, your schools, your community? And how do you see people reacting to it? What mistakes or smart moves do you see Granite Staters making when it comes to the flu? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests. Joining us by phone is Dr. Jose Montero, Director of Public Health for the state of New Hampshire. Dr. Montero, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Also with us, Dr. Jody Dion Odom, internist, infectious disease specialist at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center in Lebanon, and she's also deputy state epidemiologist. And Dr. Dion Odom, good to have you too. Thanks for your time.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, and Dr. Montero, I'll start with you. How bad is it this year?
Well, it has been quite an interesting year for the flu. We have seen what we call an early season. Most of the time, we expect to see the flu late January, February. This year, we have seen great levels of activity, especially if we measure it as fatalities or emergency room visits since December, which is not the usual thing. But then again, we're talking about the flu. There is not a typical flu season. Each one of them are different, and we need to be prepared for them.
Yeah, and why is that? Why does each one vary so much?
There are several different things that mix and match when we're talking about a flu season. It has to do, first of all, with the type of strains that are circulating. Every year, we have several different strains of the virus, some more active than others. Then there are things that have to do with weather, with congregate events, with levels of immunity in the population, and several other factors that actually science has not been able to fully explain. So the mix of all of those creates this epidemics that we see every winter that are called the flu season. And that's the reason why each one of them are different.
Yeah, and Dr. Dion Odom, you're an infectious disease specialist, as I said. What's your take on why and how this year's flu season has been so tough?
Well, I think that we tend to forget that how bad flu season is every year. I know people say when they really come down with the flu, they say, I feel really sick. And on average, people miss school or miss work for 3 or 4 days. It's much worse than the common cold. So this is what flu season does. It's something that's been with us for a long time, and it's going to continue to be with us. So I think that people should take the protection that they can.
The protection that they can, yeah. And the number one thing that doctors like yourself are saying, Dr. Dion Odom, is not too late to get the flu shot, right?
Exactly. It does take about 2 weeks after you get the shot for your body to build that protection up. But it's the best preventative measure that we have, so absolutely not too late to get it.
Best preventative measure, but from what I've read, Dr. Dion Odom, only what gives you like a 60% chance of not getting the flu?
Right. So this year it's a good match. The vaccine is a good match to the virus that's circulating out there, like Dr. Montero was mentioning. But the CDC has released some numbers that means this season about 62% of people are responding to the vaccine. That's all comers. So we know that older people are less likely to respond if you were just to look at small children, for example, they generally have a higher rate of immunity after they get the vaccine, but it's not 100%. So I think people should know just because they've gotten the vaccine doesn't make it impossible for them to get the flu, unfortunately.
Now, Dr. Montero, jump in there, please.
Important piece there is that still it offers protection. You may get the disease for those who still, after getting the flu vaccine, get the flu, but it decreases dramatically the rates of severe illness, hospitalizations, and fatalities, especially when we're looking at the elderly population and the kids under five, or especially under two, that are the groups with the highest level of risk for complications, with populations who are COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disorders, diabetes, heart conditions, or pregnancy. Those groups have a higher risk of complications. So even if they get the vaccine, if they get the flu, they are going to have less severe illness. There is data there that shows that in other seasons, you can see a decrease of around half in hospitalizations in the elderly and up to 70 or 80% decrease in mortality, which is really important.
Yeah, my son got the older son got the flu shot, but he still had the flu right before Christmas. So it doesn't work entirely, but you're saying it could have been a lot worse.
It could have been. And the other thing is that there are several different diseases that are quite similar to the flu. So sometimes people said, oh, I got the flu vaccine and I still got the flu. And that's not always accurate. Now, I'm not telling everybody that you need to go and be tested to prove the point. but just need to keep in mind that during these winter months, we have several different type of colds that go around, one of which is the flu. So there are several different things there, but still, even if it's an imperfect tool, vaccination is the best tool that we have to prevent flu and all of these severe consequences that come with it.
I have a lot more questions for both of you, but I also want to invite our listeners to join us. The number here in the exchange again is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page or on the exchange page at nhpr.org. We want to know what impact you have seen from the flu so far, whether it's hit your workplace, your schools, your community, and how do you see people reacting to it? Do you see people making smart moves when it comes to the flu or not so smart moves? Again, our number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. A couple more questions for both of you about the flu vaccine. Since physicians have really been pushing this, and Dr. Dean Odom, to you, Dr. Montero talked about those vulnerable populations, people with compromised immune systems or certain health conditions or the elderly. What about folks, though, Dr. Dean Odom, who are perfectly healthy, they're not in that vulnerable population, they don't get the shot because they feel like, look, if I get the flu, that's why I have an immune system. What do you think?
Thanks for asking that question very much, because I do think a lot of people who don't get the flu shot, that may be one of the reasons why. And what I tell those people when I'm talking to them is you never really know if you're going to be that healthy person who's unlucky enough to get a really bad episode of the flu. So every year, some people die of influenza who are very healthy at baseline.
Really?
You're at higher risk if you're in some of the risk groups that Dr. Montero was mentioning, but there are healthy people who get very, very sick with this virus. You can never know if you're going to be that person, so the best way to protect yourself is with the vaccine.
Well, and the union leader published a great map this morning looking at vaccination rates state by state. New Hampshire was, Dr. Dean Odom, between 40 and 50% of the population gets vaccinated, so not even half. Actually, I think it was 49.5%. Why is that then?
So we have made good progress in who is getting vaccinated. When you look at the numbers several years ago, before the pandemic, 2009 flu, the rates were lower. So I do think in general the vaccine rates are climbing. The other thing to say about New Hampshire is we are higher than the national average rate, so that's really good. But I agree with you that we should be able to get the percentage much higher than 50%. Dr. Montero often talks about shooting for a number much higher than that. So I concur with that 100%. We'd like to get many more people vaccinated.
And Dr. Montero, some people think the flu vaccine causes the flu itself. That's why they don't get it.
Yes, and that's a quite frequent misconception. After all of these years of research, there is clear evidence that that is not the case. But still, there is some people that will rather believe that. Now, going back to the MAPS and immunizations, there is something else that we add when we advise people to get vaccinated, is that sometimes we get vaccinated not just for us, but for those that we love. You know, we may have kids who have a higher level of risk of getting sick and having complications. We have parents who may be elderly and may die if they get the flu. So if we vaccinate ourselves and decrease the level of transmission in the community, that is a huge progress toward preventing those complications. So this immunization against the flu has a dual component. What do I get out of it for myself, which is preventing the disease, but is what do I do for those around me? And that's another really important piece. We emphasize a lot that we provide the vaccine for kids. So we purchase vaccines for every single kid in New Hampshire. They can get it for free at their doctor's office. And we keep trying to help populations get there and get immunized. It's the best thing that we can do for ourselves and the people around us.
Well, I want to ask you another question later about shot availability and all the flu clinics that crop up. But one more item that often comes under flu mythology. Dr. Montero, some people say, hey, I got the shot last year. I don't need it this year.
Yes, there are several different things out there around the flu. First, again, as we said earlier, the flu vaccine is not perfect. I would love to see a vaccine that offers protection across years and across strains. Researchers are working on that, but we are not there yet. The current vaccine offers protection that goes up to, I think, that 9 months. Dr. Dion Allen may correct me on that. But then, because the strains change every year, you need to get the vaccine every year. First, because the vaccine protection doesn't go from year to year, but second, because it may be a whole different flu virus. The fact that we call them flu virus doesn't mean that it's the same one. So you have the A's, the H3s, N2s, H1s, N1s, and all of the alphabet soup that you include there. So again, the flu vaccine doesn't give you the flu. The flu vaccine protects most people against the flu, decreases transmission in the community, but it doesn't offer you protection that goes from year to year.
All right, and we will start taking calls and emails after a short break. So you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
Good morning. It's 919, and more on flu fever hits the Granite State on the Exchange on NHPR at 10 o'clock. It's the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show. While the year is still new, it's customary to take stock not only on the passage of time, but on efforts and achievements over the last 12 months. NHPR thanks all of our listeners who support the service over the course of the year. That includes our more than 18,000 members, as well as the more than 400 corporate supporters who underwrite our programs. Together, you keep us on sound financial footing. Thank you very much. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from White Mountain Oil and Propane in North Conway, featuring the Rinnai Heater, an intelligent heating solution for homes, additions, condos, and vacation homes, whitemountainoil.com. And Northeast Delta Dental, providing dental benefits to businesses of all sizes and individuals throughout New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont. Information online at nedelta.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, flu fever hits the Granite State. We're looking at how New Hampshire's coping, and we invite you to join us with your questions or comments. 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. or on our Facebook page. Our guests for the hour, Dr. Jose Montero, Director of Public Health for the State of New Hampshire, and Dr. Jody Dion Odom, internist, infectious disease specialist at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center in Lebanon. She's also deputy state epidemiologist. One more time, that exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And let's go first to Scott and Bo, if we could. Hi, Scott. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning. Thanks.
Morning.
For I'm curious to know why there even is a flu season. How come it's not around in July, and whatever is able to kill it at the end of the season, why can't it kill it during the season?
You know, Scott, that's a great question and one I hadn't heard of. Dr. Dion Odom, what do you think? It's a good point.
It is a good question. So the flu season usually circulates in our winter in the northern hemisphere, but then it goes to the southern hemisphere in their winter and continues to circulate. So there's always flus happening somewhere around the globe And because this virus is so smart, it's picking up new genetic material and changing that whole time, which is why every year the flu season is with different viruses. It's because it's had time to mutate and to change.
But why winter?
So the reasons for winter are not entirely understood. Some of it is thought because there's more of people congregating inside, more opportunity for the virus to be shed from person to person. There's also some things about the virus that make it easier to attach to your cells in your respiratory tract when those cells are cold. I think that it's still a little bit of hypothesis about exactly why.
Well, and we've got a forecast for a pretty cold week coming up here in New Hampshire. But, you know, we've had some pretty mild winters, Dr. Dion Odom. Does that mean that the flu is easier going during mild winters?
Unfortunately, it doesn't really correlate with things like overall temperature or how cold it gets. It really has a lot more to do with the particular virus that's circulating that year, how much it attacks people and how bad the disease is.
Yeah, and you talked about sort of what a smart virus this is. It keeps changing and mutating. And one more question out of that for you, Dr. Dion Odom. Could I possibly get the flu in December and then get it again in February because it's a different type of flu?
It mutates fast, but not that quickly. So when we have a season, we generally have circulating viruses that are common. So as you said at the top, the H3N2 is what's circulating now. By the end of the season, we often start to see more influenza Bs circulating in the community. So it's possible to be exposed to a couple different viruses in the same season. Fortunately, all of those are covered with the vaccine.
I see. So chances are I'm not going to get one at the beginning and another one at the end.
Right.
You know, joining us now on the phone is Mark Joyce. He is executive director of the New Hampshire School Administrators Association to look at how this flu has affected our schools. And Mark Joyce, always good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
How would you say the schools are feeling the impact of the flu this winter?
Well, from the reports I've heard, we have an increased absence rate among students and to some degree among faculty, which is a common manifestation of the winter and the flu season.
Yeah, and is it any part of the state, Mark, that seems to be feeling it more up north, more down south, or is it pretty widespread?
I think it's pretty widespread because the conversations we've had have occurred in all of our five regions. And schools are, again, renewing their efforts at reminding both students and employees alike about all the normal precautions of washing hands and also important to stay home if you're sick.
Yeah. Have schools offered vaccines for staff?
Well, I'm aware, and perhaps your guests will have greater knowledge, but when we had the pandemic threat of a couple of years ago, I know that a number of schools became sites for the community health organizations to provide immunization. I'm not aware that any schools are doing that right now, although I know the school health insurance programs do encourage employees to take advantage of that benefit under their plan.
Has it gotten so bad, Mark, that some schools haven't been able to find enough substitutes for teachers who are out, or is it not quite that bad yet?
I have not heard that report specifically this year, unlike the time when we had the widespread virus.
Is that 2009, I think, when it was really bad?
Correct. And yeah. Jose and his team really led a remarkable effort at education and coordination through all of the schools in the state.
How does the disruption of the flu affect the schedule, Mark, of what teachers are supposed to accomplish, as in, look, we need to know this by the end of the quarter, we need to know this by the end of the year? Is it possible that kids and teachers will end this school year without covering all the bases because they'll always be playing catch-up?
Well, you know, that kind of a disruption may occur for any number of reasons, but I think schools remain to be adaptive with that. The greatest challenge for a teacher, of course, is if 20% of your students are not present for a lesson while 80% were, then it requires a great deal of artful flexibility by the teacher to be able to remediate that 20% when they return. And in a season like this, especially through the heat of winter, no pun intended, we have kind of a flowing absence rate. So a student that might have been absent before is now present. Someone who was present is now absent. So I think forever teachers have juggled that challenge.
Yeah, it is definitely tricky. Again, speaking of someone who had a kid out for almost a week, you know, it's hard to keep up with it. Final thoughts, Mark Joyce, or advice to members of the public education community, whether we're talking parents, teachers, kids, administrators?
Well, I think it's to take heed of the commonsensical advice about being sure we all wash our hands, to be careful of touching things, and also to stay home if, in fact, you are ill. People try to persevere through that, and it ends up contributing, if you will, to the spread of that disease.
Okay, Mark Joyce, good to have you as always.
Thank you.
Mark Joyce, Executive Director of the New Hampshire School Administrators Association. The number for you to join us with your questions or comments on this year's pretty tough flu season is 1-800-892-6477. How has the flu hit your community, whether it's the schools or your workplace or just the folks around you? And how do you see different people reacting to it? What mistakes, what smart moves do you see other Granite Staters making when it comes to this year's flu? Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Dr. Montero, just to follow up on something that Mark Joyce said, how do you see, Dr. Montero, New Hampshire employers reacting to this in terms of encouraging employees, like Mark did, to stay home until they're all better?
That's an incredibly important point that we have been emphasizing and working with employers for several years. When we were planning for the pandemic, we had this big discussion. If you really want to prevent the transmission in your work site, your employees may have to stay home. Now, if they stay home and they don't have sick days, then they don't earn. And if they don't earn, they don't eat. So I'll show up. If that's the case. So how flexible a work site can be on those aspects is really, really, really important. And it's something that employers need to consider because it decreases productivity. If an employee shows up and is sick, they are not working at the top of their capabilities. But in addition, they are making everybody else sick as
right.
well because you have this transmission. So instead of just having one person out for a couple of days, you're going to have 3, 4, 5, 10, whatever the number is. So this is something that employers really need to think and how to encourage that. Several places make it mandatory that if you are sick, you don't show up and do strong educational campaigns. But then again, from the employee's perspective, how do you manage that? Do you have enough sick days if you have them? How do you prioritize? Because then if you are sick, but if your kids get sick next week, how do you manage that? And it becomes a really important social issue that we need to discuss.
Yeah, it's hard. So you may be out sick a couple of days and then your kid gets sick, so you have to stay home to take care of him or her. You know, the Boston Globe reported on this recently, and Dr. Dion Odom, I want to ask you, they said 40% of private sector workers don't get paid sick days. So it's easy for us to sit here on the radio and say, you know, stay home. But if you're losing week's pay, I mean, that's a lot of money. 40% of private sector workers.
I agree. It is a big problem. And I think when we've worked with businesses in the past, especially in the pandemic year in 2009, to think about making flu preparations for the future, this is one of the major things we recommended that they think about. For schools, for hospitals, you can imagine for any workplace to put something in place or create a system so that you have backups and people can support one another to allow people who are sick to stay home.
Well, again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And let's go next to Concord. Sherry's waiting there. Hi, Sherry. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. A question, what's the risk is, if any, to the elderly or other individuals who receive more than one flu vaccine a year? You know, oftentimes they go into Walgreens, they get the shot, they forget, and then they enter the hospital and they get another one. And
oh, wow.
With those individuals.
Yeah, Sherry, have you heard of somebody doing that?
Well, oftentimes, you know, I work in human services and I get questioned by hospitals, you know, did this individual get the flu shot this year? And it's hard to always know, and that person isn't a reliable reporter.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Good question. Dr. Deanne Odom, a risk to getting the flu shot twice if you forget that you got it back in, you know, November.
Fortunately, there's no risk associated with that. The shot an elderly person is going to get is going to be the killed virus, and there is absolutely no harm to getting it more than once. I think it's a good thing that a lot of facilities and hospitals have put in place the practice of vaccinating their patients as they're discharged, because then you know that you're hitting some of those high-risk patients for both pneumonia vaccine and influenza vaccine. So it's not a high-risk situation for that person.
Something you said, Dr. Deanne Odom, piqued my interest. You said the shot is not a live virus. What did you say there? So the risk is minimal, or
right?
Or
it's a killed virus. It's
killed
called.
Virus.
So it's a dead virus. So there's no risk to getting it more than once in a season.
All right. Well, Sherry, good question. And let's go to Rye, where Brian is on the line. Hi, Brian. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hello. My question is this: if you're healthy and say you choose not to receive the vaccine and you get the flu, will the body build up antibodies that will last a lifetime that could be helpful for a similar related strain? Because the flu vaccine, as stated earlier, only lasts one season. So is it almost helpful in a way to get it?
I see. Okay, do you build up antibodies to the flu? Dr. Montero?
I will defer that question to Dr. Dionne for some specifics, but there is no evidence of life-lasting protection against those strains of the virus. I don't know if Dr. Dionne wants to expand on that.
Yeah, go ahead, Dr. Dionne.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. You're right in general that when your body is responding to a virus, you're often able to build antibodies to it that will protect you. And they can be longer-lasting antibodies than the antibodies that come with the flu vaccine. The problem with that is, as I mentioned earlier, you never know if you're going to be that person who will come down with a very severe form of the flu and end up in the intensive care or in the hospital, and that would have been preventable. The other thing is you would predict, because of the way this flu virus changes, that the flu virus next year and the year after that will be different enough from this year's flu virus that your protection from this year may not help you very much next year.
So, and as you both explained earlier, the flu virus is different every year. But I wonder, from Brian's question, you know, in 5 years, will we see the same strain that we saw this year? I mean, does it cycle through? Does the same virus cycle back through it at some other point in time?
It doesn't really. If you think about the amount of DNA in the virus, it's a very large segment that can change. So it's always changing, and the likelihood of it going back to a previous form is very, very low.
Yeah. All right. Well, Brian, good question. Thank you for joining us. And again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. With us now on the phone is John Clayton. He's Vice President of Communications for the New Hampshire Hospital Association and Foundation for Healthy Communities. And John, good to have you. Welcome back.
Thank you, Laura. Good to be with you.
Well, it seems obvious, John, you'd get more patients at the hospitals during a severe flu season. I'm wondering about staff, John. How has hospital staffing been affected by this?
Well, it's less how staffing has been affected by becoming ill themselves and more by how staffing is affected by hospital measures to deal with the flu. And if pandemic is the word that Dr. Montero wants to use, I'll use it. For instance, one hospital, Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, required every employee to have a flu shot. Every time you make a blanket requirement like that, obviously there are exceptions, whether it be for medical reasons or religious reasons where someone can't have the shot. So the countermeasure is that those who do not have the shot must wear masks if they come within 3 feet of a patient. So precaution is the biggest word, rather than worrying about staff not making it because of the flu. And healthcare workers are no different than anyone else. They have this machismo about them, and they want to go to work and do their job, serve their patients. But the watchword for healthcare workers is the same. If you're not well, stay home. If you are well enough to come to work, have the shot. If you don't have the shot, wear a mask when you come in contact with patients.
So some hospitals, it sounds like, have made the individual decision, John, all staff must get the shot.
And it is that. Each hospital is free to make its own decision and its own requirements of employees. It's pretty standard that, you know, the requirement is there, but it's optional. Some Massachusetts hospitals made it mandatory last year at the risk of losing your job. And that created a nightmare of another proportion for them dealing with the legality of that issue. So here in New Hampshire, the hospitals ask their employees to take the shot. If they choose not to, they find remedial efforts such as wearing masks.
How are hospitals having to change up their visitation policies, John, based on this tough flu season? I know there's been some changes around the state.
There have been. And again, it's anecdotal from hospital to hospital, primarily on the seacoast. We're seeing it now where Frisbee Hospital, Exeter Hospital, and Portsmouth Regional Hospital have all adopted variations on a theme. In particular, they're trying to keep younger visitors away from the hospital, in some cases age 12 and below, in others it's 14 and below, simply so they don't present a risk to patients in other areas of the hospital and also to themselves at the risk of them having been exposed to the virus.
There's been some pretty dramatic stories in the news, John. I'm sure you've read them about other states. I think in Pennsylvania, they had to put some outdoor tents outside a hospital to accommodate everybody. Have we had anything that dramatic yet in New Hampshire?
The operating phrase among hospitals is code purple. Purple is when things are starting to get out of hand, and we have not had a code purple episode anywhere in New Hampshire. We have had spikes in the Cheshire County area as well as on the seacoast, but we are telling people, we're describing that as a peak, not the peak, because as your other guests have indicated, there's an ebb and flow to a flu virus like this. So while we had a peak shortly after the start of the new year, and anecdotal evidence from our hospitals indicates that we had an unusually long holiday season this year. The holidays falling on Tuesdays made for an extended break for not just the kids, but also adults from their workplace. And when they returned to school and returned to work, shortly after that, we saw that peak. And again, it's anecdotal, but that could be a contributing factor. So no, we've not had the, I guess, the dramatic 1918 Spanish influenza type responses we've seen in Pennsylvania and New York. Although if your child plays indoor soccer in New York State, they have just banned the post-game handshake because they felt that was one more risk that the kids did not need to expose themselves to.
Really? That's interesting. I think I heard something also about maybe in some churches they're not doing, you know, the peace be with you where you shake hands, or maybe changing communion policies because who wants to drink from the same cup? So that's interesting, John. Any last points you want to make from the perspective of the state's healthcare sector?
No, the operative phrase we're using right now is slow down. Again, we did have a peak about a week ago, and most of the hospitals are reporting fewer cases of patients coming in or what they call ILI, influenza-like illnesses. As Dr. Montero indicated, you need to separate the actual flu cases from those that may be related. Patients with contributing or chronic conditions that might be compromised. So it's slowing down. Again, we hope we've seen the peak, but we also realize it may have been a peak in what could be a longer flu season.
Yeah, knock on wood when you say that, John, right?
Yeah, I do. Can you hear me?
Thanks a lot for being with us, and good luck.
Thank you, Laura.
That's John Clayton, again, Vice President of Communications for the New Hampshire Hospital Association and Foundation for Healthy Communities. And Dr. Montero, Dr. Dion Odom, I want to follow up with a couple points that came out of our conversation with John in just a minute. Lots more calls and emails for you as well. You can join us with an email at exchange@nhpr.org, post a comment on our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Comcast Business Class, provider of internet, voice, TV, and Ethernet solutions that keep pace with the growth of your business. More information at business.comcast.com. And from Core Gastroenterology of Exeter, offering comprehensive care in the evaluation and treatment of gastrointestinal disorders. CorePhysicians.org, the art of wellness. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Our goal is to leave a living legacy to organizations we love and respect.
Woolsey Conover of Holderness, New Hampshire, is a lifetime listener of public radio.
While we are here on this earth, it's our privilege to support them. And when we depart, we will have the joy and satisfaction of knowing that our support goes on. That's why we have established a state plan that includes New Hampshire Public Radio.
For more information about NHPR's planned giving program, visit nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today is on The Exchange, we're getting the latest from the flu outbreak here in New Hampshire. And as we've been hearing, this has been a pretty severe year for the flu so far. Join us with your comments or questions at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page or on The Exchange page at nhpr.org. With us for the hour, Dr. Jody Dion Odom, internist, infectious disease specialist at Dartmouth-Hitchcock in Lebanon. She's also deputy state epidemiologist, and Dr. Jose Montero, director of public health for the state of New Hampshire. And just real quickly to you, Dr. Dion Odom, coming out of that conversation with John Clayton at the New Hampshire Hospital Association, what do you think the policy should be for healthcare workers? Some states, as John told us, require healthcare workers to get the flu shot. What do you think, Dr. Dion Odom?
You know, I think that there are a lot of things that make this decision difficult at the local level. There's a lot of factors that come into play. So I would agree with John Clayton that this needs to be a decision made by the hospital based on what they know about their situation. I can say that when you look at the numbers of vaccine percentage coverage among healthcare workers, it often increases from around 60% to above 95% when you institute a policy like a mandatory policy.
Yeah, and he actually, I think, mentioned your facility, right, Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center,
mm-hmm.
as almost requiring people. How would you say it?
I would say it was a requirement is the right word. A lot of time was spent in carving out how this would be done and the way what the follow-up would be for people who were not able to or chose not to get the vaccine. But I think that people here at DHMC are very, very proud of our almost 100% vaccination rate among staff that we were able to achieve with this policy, which is in its second year.
Here's an email from someone who didn't give a name, but it's a point that I did want to ask both of you about, and I think I'll give it to you, Dr. Montero. This person says, my impression is that there were not as many free flu vaccine clinics held this year. In years past, my daughter and I had gone to Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center for one of their free vaccine clinics. This year, there didn't seem to be as many offered, and by the time I checked to see when they were, there were no more scheduled. This person says, I ended up going to CVS and paying for our vaccines, $30 each, not covered by health insurance. And this person asks, I wonder if not as many folks got the vaccine this year because of cost. And I wonder if there weren't as many free clinics held for the same reason. It's a good question, Dr. Montero. What do you think?
Couple of things. For anybody under 18 who is in New Hampshire, the vaccine is free. We distribute those to the healthcare providers, and they administer that vaccine to their patients. We purchase the vaccine. We have distributed 95,000 doses of vaccine this year based on previous history of use. For adults, it's different. The state, as an organization, as an entity, doesn't provide vaccine for adults, so it is market. So several organizations have put out immunization clinics. In most cases, to the best of my knowledge, it has been covered by insurance. Now pharmacies are doing these immunizations as well, which extend the possibilities and sites where people can get the vaccine. But I have no control over free immunizations. So they should be covered by insurance because they are already great preventive measure. In most cases, they are. But the immunization, the vaccination of adults is a private enterprise done through visiting nurses, organizations, hospitals, and the pharmacy sector that has stepped up to the plate greatly on this.
So for kids, it's free? Is that what you're saying? Or?
Yes, for the children, we buy the vaccine and place that at the clinician's offices so they can give the flu shots to the kids when they are there. Going back to one comment from a previous speaker, Mark Joyce, we are piloting some clinics. We did that last year with our public health region networks, partners in the communities, to organize flu clinics in some schools. We are doing the same. We did the same this year. It's a small piloting project. How can we make this easier, more accessible? Not everybody, not every kid, not every teenager has a scheduled appointment to their doctor during the flu season, and it may be not the most effective way to get the kid there. So what if we can offer that vaccine elsewhere? But in order to do that, we really need a good system of accountability for those vaccines and connection with the medical record of that particular patient so it gets feedback to that particular patient's chart. So we are working those details, doing some piloting. Maybe in a couple of years, we will have a different system in place.
You know, here in Concord, and I can't talk about this person's experience because it seems like they're in the Dartmouth area, but here in Concord, Dr. Montero, it seems like there's a flu shot clinic on every corner. I mean, the grocery store, the drugstore, it seems like there's one everywhere.
We have not experienced or find out reports of shortages of vaccines, which is an important point. The vaccine is still out there. Now, it may not be, and I do acknowledge this, as widely available as it was maybe in November, because, of course, people have been vaccinated, so there are less and less shots. But there are no shortages. There are no areas that are experiencing, in New Hampshire, a lack of vaccine. It may be that people need to drive or travel a little longer than what they thought, a few more blocks. But the vaccine is out there.
One other question for you. Given that there are flu shot clinics in places like drugstores and so forth, how do you determine, Dr. Montero, that you know one flu shot clinic is just as good as the next one? How is there a quality control there?
Well, we don't have a particular system to do that. Healthcare providers are licensed to do this type of activities, and the expectation is that they are following standard protocols and procedures. But we don't have a system in place to double-check that all of those clinics follow those particular standards. If users have complaints, they need to get in touch with us. The department has a group that can investigate healthcare quality-related issues.
Yeah, I want to thank this person again. Again, for sending that email, because the availability is an issue. So thanks for raising that. You know, Dr. Dion Odom, we've gotten a couple calls from people who didn't want to stay on the line, but they said they have compromised immune systems. They worry that a flu shot can make them sick since they're not that, you know, they're not in the healthiest state in the first place. What about that? Who should and who shouldn't get the flu shot?
So I think for that person, I would look at it from the other perspective. I would say that because they have a compromised immune system already, they're at risk for coming down with severe influenza. So they're one of the people I would most strongly recommend that they get the vaccine, because treatment, once you have influenza, can be difficult and prolonged, and it can be complicated by other types of infections.
So they won't get sick from the virus, from the vaccine, even though they have an immune compromised disease.
Right.
It's because it's a killed virus, as you said earlier.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right.
So who should not? People, babies under 6 months old, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. The recommendation starts at 6 months. There are very few people who in the past have had a flu vaccine and had a severe type of reaction called anaphylaxis, where maybe their lips swelled up and their throat closed. The rate of people who have this reaction is very small, kind of 1 in a million response. So those are the people who should not get the flu vaccine. But as you can tell, it's a very limited number of people.
Right. What about pregnant women? That often comes up.
They're another identified risk group. We know that pregnant women, especially as they get later on in the second and third trimester, are at risk of having severe complications with flu, both hospitalizations and even death. So there is highly recommended for pregnant women to get the flu vaccine during their pregnancy.
All right. Well, back to our calls and emails. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Waiting in Manchester is Kevin. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a sort of a two-part question. The first part being, which way is the flu virus more readily transmitted, through contact or through shared airspace? And the reason I ask that question is because I work in a customer service-based industry, and I had a lady the other day tell me that she had been sick for 2 days and then extended her hand in greeting.
Oh, dear.
What is more acceptable? Should I accept the handshake or risk offending her and possibly expose myself and my coworkers to the flu?
You know, that's a great question, Kevin. What's the most common way it's spread, Dr. Odom? Is it through, you know, airspace, people talking or coughing, or is it through that handshake? Kevin, thanks a lot for the call.
It is more often through the airspace, so coughing and then breathing in that droplet particle into your lungs. But I absolutely agree with you on, because people often sneeze and cough into their hands, the hands are very often covered with viruses too when people are infectious. It's socially very awkward to not take someone's hand when they've offered it to you. So I think you have to decide in the moment if it's what the right thing to do is. You could say no thank you if that's impossible. What I would do after I shook that person's hand is go wash my hands immediately and make sure that you don't touch your face or your nose or your eyes. You can wash the flu virus away with hand sanitizer or soap and water.
All right. Well, Kevin, thanks for the call and good point. And let's go next to Pembroke. Diana's waiting there. Hi, Diana. You're on the exchange.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. My husband is in an elderly facility, and they all got the flu shot back in the fall, but now they're giving them all Tamiflu. And I'm wondering what the benefit, how that complements the flu shot itself and the benefit for doing so.
Yeah, Diana, thanks a lot. Dr. Montero, can you answer that? And just remind us what Tamiflu is also.
there are several medications that can be given to a person who was infected or in some cases exposed to the flu virus. In Hampshire this year, we have had maybe around 45 outbreaks reported in several different type of facilities, most of those assisted living or nursing homes. In those particular places, we hope that all of the residents are vaccinated. We hope 100% of them, and we expect that most of the healthcare workers as well. But as I said earlier, the fact that the elderly are vaccinated doesn't fully protect them from developing disease. So after an outbreak or flu becomes present in that area, an added measure for those groups is to take antivirals like Tamiflu, which will prevent the development of the clinical symptoms or quickly manage those to prevent any severe illness. So my guess is that the relative of the caller is in a facility that is experiencing flu, so the right thing for them to do is certainly to protect the others, even though they were vaccinated.
Okay, Diana, thank you for the call. And in Thetford, Vermont, Hal is on the line. Hi, Hal. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. A physician friend of mine told me about a product called Sambucol, developed by an Israeli virologist, that in what I understand to be a couple of very small clinical trials was shown to reduce both the severity and the duration of flu symptoms. My understanding is that it's an extract of elderberry. And I suspect, I'm a layman, but I've read a bit on this, I suspect that whatever it is may just exist in any of the elderberry extracts. And I wanted to know if your guests were familiar with the product, if they were familiar with the studies, and what they thought of it.
Yeah, good question. What do you think, Dr. Dion Odom?
So I don't know very much about that product, unfortunately. I have heard of it before, but I haven't read those studies, so I can't comment on how well they were done.
What about the broader idea, though, that, you know, people are often looking for non-drug responses to the flu, whether it's elderberry or garlic or onions? I mean, are there any sort of alternative therapies that don't prevent maybe getting the flu, but as our caller says, reduce the severity and duration of it, so you're not so miserable?
People ask me all the time, too, is there any way that you can boost your immunity, basically,
right,
and make yourself more protected against these things? And the best way to boost your immunity is doing the things that we know, getting enough sleep, eating enough, getting enough rest, eating healthy, getting exercise when you can. Those things really do reduce your risk of coming down with illness like the flu. Some people get a lot of benefit from taking some of these herbs and extracts, but a lot of the studies looking at the herbs don't show the same efficacy that you get from the medications.
Well,
there isn't any easy way to boost your immunity other than that, unfortunately.
I mean, maybe there's a good placebo effect going on. That's worth something, right? Dr. Montero, what do you think? I mean, there must be some sort of alternative therapies that work for some people. I myself have been eating a lot of garlic.
You mean other than chicken soup? No, as Dr. Jody Dion Odom just said, we need to base this on the scientific published evidence, and these supplements or natural approaches should be tested the same way. We tend to believe that because something is natural, has no risk, and that's a big misconception. And sometimes we over-rely on those natural approaches. I don't tell people not to do them. Again, if I am at home, I bet that I will get chicken soup if I get sick. And there is some data that helps, but I wouldn't discard the other options, the pharmacological options, when we are talking about real risk of illness.
So just looking ahead, I mean, here we are, it's just mid-January. Dr. Dion Odom, what are you looking for, what are you hoping for as the flu season goes on? It's not over yet by a long shot.
Right. What we know is we've in New Hampshire had widespread activity for the past 5 weeks. And a lot of times, if you look at the duration of flu season, it's around 12 weeks with a lot of variation, obviously. So you could think of it that we're maybe in the middle of this season with several more weeks to go. We know that the severe outcomes like death sometimes lag behind when we're seeing the cases present because of the time that it takes for the severe illness to develop. So I think we are still at the place where we want to do everything we can to protect and prevent and get people who need treatment into treatment.
So if the season started earlier, Dr. Dion Odom, does that mean it ends earlier?
In theory, but this is a very difficult question to answer because when you look at flu seasons over the past 20 years, you'll see almost any variation in the length of the season, when it started, when it ended, how it tapered, how quickly it fell. So predicting the future is always really difficult with this virus.
You know what's interesting, too, and we've talked this hour about how every year the flu virus is different. Every year it requires a different vaccine. Some years the vaccine works better than others because it isn't as good a match. It's kind of surprising to me, Dr. Dionne Odom, that, you know, we're finding cures for cancer, but we're still fighting the flu.
It's true. The flu and the common cold are things that many people get, and we don't have a good way yet medically to prevent them. As Dr. Montero mentioned earlier, there are scientists actively working on new types of vaccines that will provide long-lasting protection against the flu. So there's some promise coming down the road. It's not ready yet, but maybe in some number of years we'll have something that will be longer-lasting.
Yeah, because Dr. Montero, for some diseases, you get the vaccine once and you're done. You're good.
Yes, and we will all love to have this with the flu, but we are not there yet. So in the meantime, we still need to do what we are doing today, that is getting the flu vaccine every year, but at the same time, having the behavioral practices that will help us to be protected. So stay home if you are sick. Keep your kids home if they are sick. Wash your hands and follow cough etiquette. Don't cough in your hands, and so on and so forth. Those are still the best tools that we have.
Well, Dr. Montero, good to talk to you this hour. Thanks a lot and stay healthy.
Thank you.
Dr. Jose Montero, Director of Public Health for the State of New Hampshire. Dr. Jody Dionne Odom, it was good to have you. Thank you also for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
Dr. Jody Dionne Odom, internist, infectious disease specialist at Dartmouth-Hitchcock in Lebanon. She's also deputy state epidemiologist. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we listen back to parts of President Obama's inauguration speech and talk about what it implies for his next 4 years. Then, the debate over privacy in an age of information saturation. We'll look at several proposals to overhaul New Hampshire's privacy laws. And we end the week with New Hampshire Health and Human Services Commissioner Nicholas Tumpas. Email us at nhpr.org and join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show and the Friday News Roundup next.